Welcome, guys, to the Gridiron Gurus. I'm your host, Keith. I'm joined by the Coach King Gaming. I'm still not gaming anymore, is it? It's just Coach King. Maybe gaming later.
Maybe later.
And also Austin. And we're going to jump right into it. There was a coach that lost his job. Not only did the coach lose his job, but the AD did too. Georgia Tech fired Jeff Collins and the AD Todd Stansberry. And this came on the heels of, I think it was Lane Kiffin. After the game, he said that he kind of had went easy and pulled. And I don't know why, as a coach, you would say that about another coach, just outside of trolling, which, you know, Lane Kiffin's kind of known for.
Yeah.
But I'm going to kick this over to Jesse and have his thoughts.
I don't really have a whole lot of thoughts on it, to be honest. I mean, I think it was warranted. Jeff Collins was the most wins he'd had at Georgia Tech. This is year four. He had a 3-7 season was his best season, and that was the COVID year. It was a shortened season. But I mean, he's, you know, 3-9, 3-7, 3-9, and then was starting off already 1-3, looking at a potential, you know, worse than previous years type of season. I think it was warranted. I know Georgia Tech is not really, I guess, thought of as like a blue blood per se, or a prominent top tier program. But you know, you think back to the Paul Johnson years when they actually were competitive, and it was 2015 most recently that they were a ACC champion and played in the Orange Bowl against Mississippi State. I feel like it was 15.
That sounds right, but I'm
because that was it. The Dak Prescott at Mississippi State year with Dan Mullen. I mean,
it was a good game.
It was a very good game. And I think that Georgia Tech, they've got, like I mentioned when we talked about this, you know, earlier, when the news dropped about him getting fired, Atlanta is the whole state of Georgia is a hotbed for recruiting. But you're right there in Atlanta, which is a big, you know, big city, which is a very marketable place for a college athlete. Georgia Tech, the university, is a prominent university, highly known technological university.
Right. I mean, you can't be more in the middle of a city.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that, you know, if they get this right, I think Georgia Tech can compete, especially in the ACC. The ACC is not a dominant conference by any means.
Well, I remember when Jeff Collins got hired, one of the things I was really – I wouldn't say excited, but I was interested to see. I felt like at times, although Paul Johnson – was successful there.
Was limited.
I know, exactly.
Yeah, with the triple option.
I feel like he was limited, and he also, just today's athletes, that's not like a very exciting.
Yeah, he had an old
system to
offense,
be in.
Yeah.
I was kind of interested to see how well Jeff Collins did with those Georgia athletes and the system he was bringing. And they went away from the Russell uniforms, went to Adidas. It was kind of like just an entire program shift.
It was a complete change.
And like you said, he's at 3 wins every year, and this year was looking like it was probably going to be one of his worst years.
Right.
For me though, the thing that's kind of exciting is who do they go after now? Because I mean, there's a lot of names thrown out there. I mean, obviously we've talked about it. We've heard Deion Sanders. I don't know how actually likely that is.
I don't see it.
I don't see that. I think that would be really exciting to see what he would do with those Atlanta area athletes and the surrounding areas. But Jamie Chadwell is another name I've heard.
That was what I was about to say. Jamie Chadwell is the one that I saw most recently on an article, and that's the most exciting one to me because because we were talking about Jamie Chadwell again off air a few days ago, and I don't feel like Jamie Chadwell is going to be looking to take a Power 5 job right away. You know, not a program that is, you know, expecting to win right away, you know, and to take that, because that's a big step up from Coastal Carolina. But Georgia Tech is not as big of a step up as, say, a Nebraska or, you know, something along those lines. I think Georgia Tech would be a perfect landing spot, because you're still recruiting the same type of kids, more or less. You're still recruiting the same side of the map.
Right.
And I think his offense is like a new age style option. Like he has some option game. He can spread you out. It's kind of like a I guess I would call it a spread option for lack of a better term. But yeah. I think his offense fits the type of athletes that Georgia Tech has recruited in the last few years. I think that he could be really successful there, and I think he knows the area well enough. You know, he's been on the East Coast, he's been in the Southeast. You know, he's an East Tennessean. He knows this region. He has connections in this region. I think he would be a great fit, personally.
I can see that. And you know, you have Auburn, Nebraska. That's a little bit too
big. Yeah, those are really big
leap.
I mean, you go to Auburn, you're winning now. And I get, you know, Georgia Tech, they want to win ball games, obviously. They wouldn't have fired this guy. But he went 3-9, 3-7, 3-9. And started off 1-3.
A 6-win season looks a lot better at Georgia Tech than it does at Auburn.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I'm talking year one. It was 2013 when they made it to the ACC title game.
Okay,
at Georgia Tech.
I was off
and lost by 2 to Florida State, 37-35.
Wow, I did not think it was 9 years ago. That's a lot longer than I thought it was.
Right, and I actually hadn't realized that Collins had been at Georgia Tech for 4 years. And obviously, I agree that it probably was time for him to go. I don't know that the time was right. I mean, you're 4 weeks into the season. I get that he's only got one win, but
I guess early
on coaching firings just kind of baffle me sometimes.
See, that's me.
Scott
because
Frost made sense.
Well, I mean, even at that, like when you fire a guy, you know, week four, week five into the season, or even Scott Frost was what, week three, week two, week three, wasn't it?
Week three.
Yeah.
When you fire a guy that early, you're not going to hire another coach from a different program. He's not just going to, you know, jump ship in the middle of the season.
No, it was week two.
So
it was after week two.
Was it week two?
Because they played – Oklahoma played Nebraska.
Week three.
Week three. And
okay, yeah, he was
Kansas
there.
State
yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, anyways, like, you're not going to hire a coach in the middle of the year. They're not just going to jump ship and come to your program. And it's not like they're going to have their entire staff together to go out and start recruiting.
Right.
So I don't understand firing coaches. I've never understood that. I always thought, you know, if you're going to fire, make the decision to fire the guy, you know, so be it. But fire him when the season's over.
Right.
I don't know. I'm sure there's some type of, you know, logical athletic director reason that I don't know. It's way over my pay grade.
Get rid of the AD too.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know then. I don't know. Who knows?
And it might be a thing of they're just wanting a reset.
That kind of just sounds like a program that just wants a reset button.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, sometimes, you know, wait until the end of the season kind of sends a message that, you know, we're just going to be mediocre. And I think.
Who actually made this decision? Because I saw earlier in the week,
would have been the chancellor or the president.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, I feel like it was Saturday, not, maybe it was Sunday night. I had saw an article that they were making they were going to make a change with Jeff Collins. They weren't sure if the AD would make the coaching hire. At the time, they were talking about Stansberry,
mm-hmm.
and then Stansberry gets fired too. So I just wonder if like that was the original decision that they were going to let Stansberry stay on, you know, or I don't know what happened. But they decided
it could have just been a leak.
Could have been.
And they didn't know about Stansberry yet.
Maybe
that,
so.
That just wasn't part of the information they had been given. I'm talking about the person that was giving the information. They didn't know about Stansberry.
Right.
Yet.
Yeah, I don't. I mean,
they were moving from Collins.
There's probably plenty enough information out now that we could easily probably go read and figure out pretty quickly if we wanted to.
Yeah,
but
you're right.
This wasn't really something that I dug that deep into.
Right.
But
there was one name that I've told you guys off air about is Matt Rhule, the Carolina head coach.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that it's going to be Georgia Tech, but I think that he will be included in a lot of these college coaching rumors that start circulating around, especially towards the end of the season. Because I don't think he makes it out of – I think this is his last year in Carolina.
I think he ends up somewhere on the West Coast. I'm thinking like an Arizona State or even an Iowa State. Because I'm one of the believers that believes Matt Campbell is going to Nebraska. I'm on that ship.
And I know
right
people
now.
Have mixed feelings about Bill O'Brien.
I don't know yet. Let me see what happens with Iowa State towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
People have mixed feelings about Bill O'Brien. I get that. But he's going to get a head job somewhere.
I think he has to at least have an opportunity.
It's just going to depend on where. And I don't know what Georgia Tech is for him. Is it a step up from being the OC at Alabama to being the head coach at Georgia Tech? Is it really a step?
Well, I mean, he was a successful head coach at, you know, Penn State.
I think he wants to be a head coach. I mean,
I agree, but what I'm saying for him, is that really the path that you think is to success, or would you rather wait for a different program?
Those are just some names that are just kind of spouting off the top of my head. I know the Georgia running back coach is another name that I've seen mentioned. I can't think of his name off the top of my head.
From where?
Georgia's running back coach. Yeah.
I don't know.
You keep talking.
I don't know that he gets it, but how interesting would it be if Bill O'Brien's the new head coach at Auburn? That would be pretty wild.
And like I said, I know people have mixed feelings about Bill O'Brien. Some people, you know.
Yeah, some people are.
I'm indifferent. I really don't have a feeling about him. I just know.
I think he's a good college coach. I think he's a terrible GM.
Yeah, I mean, I know the reputation that being an Alabama offensive coordinator has had the past few years.
Yeah.
And
Dale McGee.
But
I
think the Texans should hire Bill O'Brien back, or even the Colts or the Jags maybe should hire Bill O'Brien back, because
let him have control of the GM.
Yeah, absolutely, because he was a perfect fit in the AFC South
for the Titans.
Shut up, Keith.
But anyways, is there any other names that you guys want to throw out before we get into the rest of last week's recap?
I think it would be, you know, disrespectful to not at least mention Luke Fickell, but I'm kind of starting to wonder too. Somebody's mentioned, you know, maybe one of y'all, I don't know, maybe an off air, we talked about with Cincinnati going to the Big 12, does Luke Fickell leave?
We mentioned it last podcast, I think. I think I had brought it up specifically,
maybe you did.
But
I'm kind of on that
bandwagon. For me, where those two programs are at, Cincinnati's coming off a playoff year.
Yeah.
Last season.
Yeah.
They're moving in the Big 12. I feel like the trajectory for that program versus a Georgia Tech right now just wouldn't make
a
whole lot of sense.
The stock's a lot higher right now.
Yeah.
I would agree on that, but the only counterpoint I would make is he's going to have a tougher way of getting through his conference schedule if he's in the Big 12 versus if he goes to Georgia Tech in the ACC.
I agree with that too. Now, I would say
I don't know if I would agree with that.
Top to bottom, the Big 12, or not the Big 12, the Big 10, or is it the Big 12?
Well, I see what he's saying.
I mean, if you think about it, when Oklahoma and Texas leave.
Yeah, but that's going to be, what, 2025?
20, that's only two or three more seasons.
But he's got to compete with them early against recruiting.
Top to bottom, the Big 12 is still better than the ACC. Top to bottom, it is.
I don't know, but I think he's talking about just with Oklahoma and Texas.
Top to bottom, yeah, I would agree with that. But I'm thinking long run here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think Luke Fickell set up pretty good at Cincinnati, even if Oklahoma and Texas are there.
Right.
But I think that recruiting in Cincinnati is a lot harder than the recruiting at Georgia Tech, in my opinion, because
it is.
It's a lot more fertile in Atlanta. And two, you're competing with Ohio State and, you know, the team up north in that area. You got Kentucky right below you. Like, I think it's a lot harder, in my opinion.
I want to do is I'm going to play devil's advocate because I did that to you. This is to Jesse. Yeah, you're right that it is a harder way to harder grounds to recruit because of the other big boys, but he's also established.
He is.
As far as
yeah.
coaching at Cincinnati. If he can sell that I'm not leaving,
right,
then that helps his case recruiting at Cincinnati. So I'm just throwing out points to both.
I agree with that. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of on that fence, so that he doesn't leave. I'm kind of thinking that he stays where he's at.
Luke Fickell, yeah, I don't think he's leaving. I mean, if he does leave Cincinnati, I would see it for a bigger
position than Georgia Tech.
Yeah, a much bigger position and a much easier program to turn around than Georgia
Tech. I'm thinking it's going to be more like a bigger Power Five, or more like almost a blue blood. Like, I could see possibly. I don't know that this go around happens, but something like a Nebraska. I don't think he goes to Nebraska just because those states. I mean, the state of his program versus Nebraska right now is an absolute dumpster fire.
Right.
But
polar opposite.
Polar opposite. Absolutely.
Right. But well, let's say let's throw us out there. Say if
I also think he wants to stay up north.
You think so?
I think that's definitely his preference. I know he would have loved to have that Ohio State job a little bit longer than he did.
Yeah.
But. Is he an Ohio State alum? I'm pretty sure he is. Is that right? You have to fact check me on that. I'm pretty sure he is. I remember when he was the interim up there, that was kind of the thing, if I remember right. But, yeah, he's an up north guy. I think a lot of his ties are up north.
Yes.
Ohio State? Okay. I think he has a lot of ties up north. I don't know. I just don't know how well he would fit into a recruiting battle with all of the names
in the
South.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, that's what I'm saying.
So –
It's going to be interesting, and it's something we're going to keep an eye on for the rest of, you know, the rest of the season, see how it kind of shakes out.
Yeah.
Because not only does, you know, because we've got, what, two? Nebraska, Georgia Tech.
Arizona State.
Arizona State. Seems like there was another
potentially
one.
Potentially Auburn.
Potentially Auburn. That's what I'm thinking about. You know, that's just four. And, you know, we've talked about off-air plenty of other programs. So
once those start getting filled, then more jobs open.
The dominoes are going to start falling.
Well, I think we can go ahead and call it that Brian Harsin's not making it for the season.
I don't think so. I think he loses this weekend.
And I'm going to say this very loosely because this is all hearsay, I think. But I'm almost positive I saw somewhere where they were – it was a pretty much if he loses to Missouri last week, he's gone.
He should have.
Yeah.
And he should have. But for me, why are you basing your – like if you beat a Missouri at home – how much does that really tell you about your program? Like, what does that matter? I mean, honestly, the way he won, he probably still deserved to get fired, honestly. I mean,
it should have been a ball game.
Anyway, I guess I'm getting on a rabbit hole there, but.
That's all right. So we're going to move into last week's games. The first game we're going to talk about is number 6, Oklahoma, losing to Kansas State 54-41. Is that right? Is that right?
I think it was 41. I think you got the Wake Forest score.
Let me see here.
I think it was 41-34.
For me, the big takeaway from that game was
my handwriting.
Speaking of, we've already talked about Nebraska a little bit so far, but Adrian Martinez gets out of Nebraska.
Yep.
Transfers to Kansas State.
Oh yeah, and look good.
And looks very good.
Hang on,
I wrote down the numbers here. 234 passing, 148 rushing, 5 total touchdowns, 4 of those on the ground.
Right.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
That's against not Brent Venables.
Against Brent Venables led Oklahoma defense, which I'm not surprised that they're struggling year one on that side of the ball necessarily. Well, actually, yeah, I kind of am. I mean, they've always had, you know, pretty decent talent on the defensive side of the ball. But
something about that Big 12 in defense, it's just.
Yeah, but
it mixes like water.
Oklahoma, I mean, their defense has never been good.
It's been good enough.
It's been good enough, and they Oklahoma's the one team in the Big 12 that has those athletes on defense that you could potentially. And I'm not saying that across the board, but at certain positions has those athletes that you would see in the SEC, for instance. Right.
I would agree.
Anyways, that was the big takeaway for me was the way Adrian Martinez played. It feels like he's been playing football. Now, he's not related to Taylor Martinez that played at Nebraska a while back.
Yes, there is a relation there, I'm pretty sure.
I thought I read that there wasn't.
See, I thought that – okay, maybe I could be wrong.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But it feels like Adrian Martinez has been in college football for, like, my entire life.
Well, didn't he start at Nebraska as a freshman?
He did, yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess my biggest takeaway from this is, what does this do as far as, you know, we talk about Texas and Baylor.
You're correct, by the way. That's not his brother. I was wrong.
I mean, you could see the correlation there. But
anyway.
What does this game do for Texas and Baylor and Oklahoma State as far as the Big 12 goes?
I don't really – we're talking about the same game.
Talking about Oklahoma K-State.
I don't necessarily think that it knocks any of them out of a chance because the way the Big 12 is set up is the top two teams in the standings go. Yeah. So everybody's going to get a shot at playing everybody. So I don't necessarily think that this game really right now is that big of a deal. Now, down the stretch,
I think it's a huge deal.
Oklahoma, because K-State's also going to have to play Baylor, Oklahoma State, you know. And, yes, they got a leg up on Oklahoma, but can they beat, you know, can they beat the Baylor?
What I was meaning was, like, for Baylor and for an Oklahoma State, for a Texas, the door is now open. You know, it's not like Oklahoma
I'm sorry. Yeah, I see what you – yeah. And I think the door has always been open.
I don't think the door was ever closed for Baylor. I mean, they're still – without a loss in the Big 12.
The door wasn't closed, but the door is now more wide open. Because now that Oklahoma does have a loss,
now they have to win out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know, wounded dog mentality. is, you know, they're fighting for their life every week now.
Yeah.
And whereas for Baylor, Texas, Oklahoma State, these other teams, it's now, I guess I can throw Texas out because we're going to get into that game in a minute. It's more wide open. It's a clearer path to the title, or for the conference title, and for a college football playoff.
Well, as always, I think it's called the Red River Showdown now. Is that right?
It is. Yeah.
It's a big game. I mean, it was going to be a big game anyways, but now there's the added implication that both teams now have. I think we could all agree that Texas's loss this past weekend was much worse than Oklahoma's.
Oh, absolutely.
To me. 100%. But now there's the added implication of they both have a loss against a team that you really wouldn't have expected it to come from.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, it, like you said, it's kind of like a dog mentality. You gotta show up.
Right. Right. You show up, or it's
probably game. I mean, it's probably game over. I feel like it'd be tough to be a two-loss team in the Big 12, and really,
especially when you still have Baylor,
especially for Oklahoma.
Iowa State left to play.
Right. Yeah, Oklahoma. I mean, I'm sure they had playoff. I mean, you know.
Right.
And they're still there.
They're still there.
They're still there.
Yeah.
But it just got a lot harder.
Right. The thing for me with Oklahoma and Texas are on two different footings as far as the way they view their head coach. Sarkisian is still rebuilding the program and trying to build them up. Venables is trying to build on a solid foundation.
And I think people thought Venables was going to come. Well, maybe I read the room wrong, but I think some people in Norman thought that Venables was going to come in,
just continue this
and
the
just continue the success that Lincoln Riley took over.
Exactly what I'm saying
from Bob Stoops, and that was just not going to happen.
Right.
They're two different, entirely different coaching philosophies. For one.
Oh yeah.
Two. Lincoln Riley did a much bigger part as far as damage goes than just him leaving when he left.
Yeah.
Right.
He took the best athlete on their team.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mario Williams, probably the best or one of the better receivers on Oklahoma's football team.
Mm-hmm. A lot of future recruits.
I'm blanking. A lot of future recruits, yeah. The list goes on. I'm just saying him leaving was much worse than
losing Lincoln Riley. That the fans view it.
Yeah.
Oklahoma was ready to take the next step with Venables. Whereas Texas and Sarkisian, they're still saying, hey, we might still be a year away after this year.
Well, Oklahoma definitely had a sour taste in their mouth. It reminded me of a Lane Kiffin-esque Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln Riley leaves when they thought, you know, he was their guy.
Right.
He leaves for a program that he views as the prettier girl. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
you're right.
And Oklahoma fans were kind of like, you know, hoping Venable was going to come in and just punch everybody in the mouth and show that it didn't matter who was at the realm of the program. And
not so much.
Not so much, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of don't think that is unwarranted by either fan base. I think that Texas is another year away. And I think that, you know, Texas fans have every right to feel that way. And I also think that Oklahoma fans have every right to feel like, now, I'm not saying Oklahoma is a national championship team, but I think that they are still, you know, head and shoulders the best, if not the second best team in the Big 12.
I agree.
So they should definitely expect them to win or at least compete for the Big 12 championship. So
they shouldn't expect a loss to Kansas State.
No. State. So, I mean, I see what you guys are both saying, but I also kind of agree with these fan bases, too.
Yeah, I'm not downgrading that part of it. I'm more so.
If they want to burn some mattresses. And
I guess I'm more so looking at the bigger picture.
Let's lead the charge. Let's go. Yeah. You know.
Well, I guess my last point on that is that Sarkisian's in a better spot.
He is. His expectations are not as high right now.
That's where I was getting at.
Yeah.
Expectations for Sarkisian are not as high as they are for Venables. And it's not really fair for Venables, but
it's the situation
he stepped into.
To that credit is that he knew that going in.
Exactly.
You know, he took the job knowing that the expectations were going to be high. Mm-hmm. You know, you're taking a team that, I don't know, last 4 years they were a playoff team, what, three times? Two or three times? out of the last 4 or 5 years.
They were either in it or on the outside looking in.
Yeah, so I mean, you're taking over for a playoff team. Though they lost talent, they lost a lot of talent, a lot of the recruits and stuff. You still have the most prominent and most well-known program in the entire conference.
I agree.
So I mean, I
probably not a tougher first head coaching job, I could imagine.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
I would agree. I would agree, because most of the time when you're stepping into that situation, it's more of a rebuild than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, he stepped directly into a fire.
Right.
Yeah, and was expected to run.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So I'm gonna give the score. Number 22 Texas lost to Texas Tech 34-37, and we've kind of already hit another.
Even in a rebuilding year, that shouldn't happen. Not with Texas, it shouldn't happen. But now I'll give props to Texas Tech. Texas Tech looks like a very decent football team, and I'll be honest. There's a lot of football left. I would not be surprised if this is not the only upset that Texas Tech gets this season. Would not surprise me at all.
I will agree with you to a point.
And I'm not saying Oklahoma, but I wouldn't be surprised if they beat another team that's considered a quote-unquote upset later in the year.
That's not what I'm agreeing with you to a point on. I'm agreeing with you to a point with Texas. They're on their backup quarterback, and he's not 100%.
They're
staring in the barrel of a third string if that guy, you know, tweaks the ankle again.
Yeah.
So, I'm not saying I give him a pass, but at the same time, I understand. You shouldn't have lost, but I understand why.
I don't know. I guess I'm being a little too critical, but to me,
I don't think it's a game you should lose. But
I don't think you should lose it either.
You're without your starting quarterback. I wouldn't say Lubbock is a ridiculous environment, but it's a big rivalry game.
Any road game, and any in-conference road game outside of maybe Vanderbilt, is going to be a tough thing for.
And that game meant everything to Texas Tech. I mean, everything. They stormed the field.
Oh yeah, they stormed the field.
Yeah, I mean, it was everything.
Right.
Act
like you've been there before, Texas Tech.
Yeah, that place is lame. Did you see, I mean, they did some pretty ridiculous stuff when they were on the field as well.
Right.
The fans, which we don't have. Yeah.
That's just my takeaway from it. All right. So moving on to the next game that happened this past weekend that we want to talk about. Arkansas lost. Number 10, Arkansas had lost to number 23, A&M. 23-21. And I'm going to just.
Stupidity.
Just sit back and.
Stupidity and lost this game. Arkansas is up 14. It's either 14-0 or 14-7 with a chance to go to score.
It was 14-0 because I texted you guys and I said, how about that spread?
Okay.
They're on
the 3-yard line going in.
What point in the game was this?
This is early in the first quarter. This is
early in the second.
It may be the second quarter. Yeah, second quarter.
Okay.
Or late in the first.
They're about to score, get 21 on the board. And they called a quarterback draw from the 3-yard line. And tried to send KJ Jefferson over the top. How stupid. He fumbles the ball.
Mm-hmm.
The defensive back picks it up. And now I will give credit. I don't know what the kid's name was for Texas A&M. I should have looked this up for the stat. Makes probably the most heads-up defensive play I've seen in a long time.
I think you actually put that in our group.
It was an awesome heads-up play. I think KJ Jefferson actually was the one that ran it down. And the kid turns and hands the ball off to his teammate, who takes it all the way for a score. And that completely took all the air out of
that's Arkansas. Called recruiting amazing athletes.
Yeah.
With high football knowledge.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, you're about to put 21 on the board and probably, you know, deflate the entire Texas A&M sideline.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, you call –
What down was it?
It was first.
Was it first down?
I think it was first.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and I mean, I get the fact that you have a freight train at quarterback. Right. This is probably the most Cam Newton-looking quarterback we've seen since Cam Newton.
I agree.
Just to be – I mean, the build, the mobility that he has, the arm, he's the most Cam Newton-like quarterback we've seen since Cam Newton.
The play calling, too, also makes it kind of look that way.
Yeah, and it was very surprising because – now, correct me – but is Kendall Briles not still the offensive coordinator down there?
Yes.
I just am blown away.
I'm pretty sure.
I am so blown away that Kendall Briles would call that. So, like, was there a miscommunication? Was it a, you know, was it a call that, you know, he decided to call his own number on? Like, maybe, you know, it was an RPO. He read something wrong pre-snap. And I don't know. But I'm just, like, I remember watching that play. I mean, literally my jaw dropped when it happened. And I thought, I cannot believe that they just did that. Because he goes up, and as he's going up, he didn't have secure the ball.
Right.
And it just pops out, and there it goes. And then just put Texas A&M right back in the game. And, you know, had it not been for that, I mean, Arkansas still had a chance to win the game. They had a chance to kick the field, game-winning field goal at the end, which was crazy too.
Right.
But had it not been for that touchdown, Arkansas probably wins it without even needing a field goal.
Yeah, I don't have much to add. I mean, I really don't. Pretty much every point that was hit was, I mean,
right.
I think that's what most every fan that watched the game took away from it. I mean,
stupidity, just sheer stupidity.
A lot of people
who in our group
terrible, picked, just terrible.
Picked Texas A&M to cover.
On the board last
on
week.
On the board last week.
Not one of us.
I don't think one of us.
Not one of us.
Okay, that's.
I thought it was gonna. If I remember right,
not one of us.
If you want to hit like the rewind button with the little noise, going back to last week, I'm pretty sure I was saying it was going to be a 17-point ball game.
I literally just listened to this the other day.
And that's how I was going to – that's how I thought it was shaping up, but obviously not.
Right.
It's one of those things where I still think Arkansas's the better football team.
I agree. I 100% agree.
That's college football, big rivalries, things happen.
That is momentum at its finest.
Yeah.
And – but, yeah, no, like the line last week was – A&M by 2.5, and we all three talked about how dumb everybody in Vegas was for making A&M a 2.5-point favorite, especially with being neutral site.
They didn't.
If it had been Arkansas by 6.5, I still would have took Arkansas. That's a touchdown lead. I would have took Arkansas.
Right.
I am blown away.
I would have taken them at 10.
Honestly, I probably would have too. I'd have thought about it because 10's a lot, but I probably would have taken them.
Right.
I probably would.
It's just
nine,
so.
If you told me 9.5, they won, but yeah.
It's been such a weird 4 weeks of college football because
I'm telling you, it's 2007.
A&M wins. They lose to App State at home. They get a win over Miami, who obviously has some serious issues that we'll get to.
We are going to talk about that in a moment.
It's 2007, guys. I've been saying it. It's 2007.
When he said wild year, I knew that the 2007 comment was coming. I knew it was.
And it's funny, you know, we watched that. One of y'all sent the video, and I love the SEC roll call video.
Yeah, that was me.
And I, you know,
Matt Mitchell,
I lost it when he said that, and he started the little, you know,
the memory thing.
Yeah, and he was like, oh gosh, what's Kansas record right now? They're 4-0. It's 2007. Buckle up. He's not wrong. It's 2007 all over again.
Right.
It's just going to get crazier.
Well, and this also comes back to a point really quickly we made last week too. The SEC is wide open as it's been
since 2007.
In my recent memory. I mean, I think Bama is more beatable than they've been in a long time.
We'll find out this weekend
okay.
what Alabama really is.
Let's talk about that, okay? Because, again,
small sample size.
I was looking to make some graphics about 2007 the other day because I was just like, this is crazy how much it resembles it. Do you know how many losses LSU had going into the SEC championship? Because they won the SEC over our Tennessee Vols. Two. They were a two-loss team going to the SEC championship game.
Both were conference games, weren't they?
Yes, and then they ended up beating Tennessee and making the Natty at barely squeaked into the two seed, and they beat Ohio State.
Yeah,
was that not the year? That was the year, wasn't it?
What? I don't know.
The goal line, UT in Death Valley, the goal line, 13
no.
players on the field.
No, no. That's the Dooley
that's,
year.
That's
you, I'm way off. Not. Holy, yeah, holy.
No,
cow.
You're good.
I'm way off.
Young gun.
2007.
Check
was
your stats.
We lost.
Come
I think
on,
we
man.
Played
way
LSU
off.
That year too, but in the regular season they beat us pretty bad, I believe, in Death Valley. But then the SEC championship game is a tight game. But that was Eric Ainge. We actually had a shot and we missed the ball in the back of the end zone. I believe if I'm remembering correctly. But no, like I'm telling you, it's just buckle up. If you love the craziness, which I ain't gonna lie, I'm hoping for just complete crazy, all anarchy, you know, just for everything to break loose.
Tennessee did not play LSU that year.
Did we not? Okay, never mind. I'm off
too. They lost to a number 17 ranked Kentucky in Lexington.
Yep.
And then lost at home to an unranked Arkansas.
Yep.
Then played Tennessee.
But because of all the beatdowns, everybody beat everybody that year. Yeah, okay. LSU still made it into the SEC Championship game. And,
who did Kentucky have a quarterback that year?
Tennessee was a two-loss team going into the that same year. Was actually a three-loss team on overall record going into the SEC title.
What year was the
that year though? Florida had Tim Tebow. Mm-hmm. Georgia had Matt Stafford, no Sean Marino.
Yes.
Kentucky had Woodson. Was that his name? The Woodson quarterback. I think they had Randall Cobb.
That's about right, yeah.
The East was pretty loaded
as
far as talent. So for us to actually make the SEC Championship game is pretty impressive. I know it's a Tennessee fan in me saying that, but, I mean, pretty crazy that we were able to make it.
I would agree. Anyways.
But, yeah, moving on to it's 100% 2007. I need to make we need a shirt. It's 2007 all over again.
Okay, what was the year where Tennessee the goal line standing against LSU?
2010.
2010.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because we also got beat by North Carolina in the bowl game.
We went down to Death Valley and
thought that was like 2012.
Nah, it's 2010.
Dooley's first year.
Yeah, and the reason I know that is because I remember watching that game with my leg. That was my ACL surgery year, and my legs propped up on a couch.
2010 sounds right because
it was 2010.
I just saw that replay this week on my social media feed because, you know, we're going back down there. But
yeah.
Moving on, we got two more games to talk about, and that's going to end our recap. The next one is Clemson. Was it
on the road over Wake Forest?
It was in Wake Forest.
It was at Wake Forest. Clemson beat Wake Forest 51-45 in a double overtime game.
Yep.
Very exciting, but I'm not sure how I feel about it. Like, I don't know if I'm supposed to be excited for Clemson or if I'm more worried about it because I'm not sure about Wake Forest either.
Let's give Wake Forest some props. You know, Sam Hartman is a good quarterback, and they're very good. Yeah, their team is pretty talented. They got some good receivers. You know, they're a pretty good team. But Wake Forest was in control of that. I watched that up until Tennessee kickoff. I was watching that game, and Wake Forest was in control of that game most of the game. I want to think were they not up 14 at 1.2?
Seems like that they were.
I think it was early. Mm-hmm. But they ended up giving Clemson an opportunity to get back into it, you know, and otherwise they should have ran off with it too.
Right.
You know, I thought that Wake Forest looked like the better team.
Right.
And, you know, hats off to Clemson though, because they've been in those situations before. They knew how, you know, they were resilient. They knew how to get back into the game and were able to pull out the win. I do think they are potentially on upset alert. The fact that they're at home this week against NC State,
I would put them on upset alert.
Well, I think them at home, if they were going to NC State, 100% upset alert. I think the fact that they're home, though, I don't think they can overlook NC State. I think that their chances are better. But you know, they definitely, and I think on the flip side of that, I think if they host Wake Forest. They probably beat them in regulation, honestly.
The biggest takeaway to me was if you're a Clemson fan or if you're Dabo Sweeney, it's really encouraging to see DJ be complete without a turnover.
Yep.
He threw for four or five touchdowns. I just had it pulled up. Five touchdowns, almost 400 yards. And the biggest thing for me is zero turnovers. they really need him to be what Hendon Hooker is for Tennessee. Just do not be sloppy with the football. They have a tenacious defensive line, probably the best in the country, one of the best in the country. That's been DJ's problem for a little while now. He's inaccurate. He's very turnover happy. So for Clemson to go onto the road to Wake Forest against what looks to be I'm not very big on NC State, to be honest. Probably the second best team in the ACC. I think it's very close between, you know, NC State and Wake. I think Florida State's around the three spot, kind of.
I think so.
And they're close.
Yeah.
You're not including Miami in that?
Huh. Funny.
Cricket.
We're going to talk about Miami in a moment.
Anyways, that was the biggest thing for me. No turnovers for DJ. 3 for 400. Sam Hartman's very good at football.
Yeah, he is very good at football.
But if DJ can be consistent, not turn the ball over, Clemson's going to have a shot in a lot of football games they play.
Well, and you talk about if you're a Clemson fan, you know, the big takeaway. Here's my big takeaway if I'm a Clemson fan. Your team just went, DJ, just went into a hostile road environment, mm-hmm. and was able to pull out a double overtime win against a quality Wake Forest team. That is huge because in October, they're going to Tallahassee. I think it's a big game. And then in mm-hmm. November, they're going to South Bend. And I think both of those games are huge environments,
right?
Huge moments, and they're two teams that could very well beat you if you are not, you know, up to par. So I think the fact that he was able to, you know, leave that game with no turnovers and that they just look like a better football team than they have in mm-hmm. recent weeks, I think that gives you some hope because, I mean, their schedule is pretty tough.
It's not very friendly.
No, I mean, you're going to Tallahassee. I mean, they're going to Boston College after NC State, and, you know, Boston College, they should win, but still it being on the road, Boston College is one of those sneaky teams. Mm-hmm. They're hosting Syracuse, who has apparently caught fire, going to Notre Dame, hosting Louisville, who has, I think, the most explosive quarterback in the ACC, Malik Cunningham. He doesn't have a lot around him, but he is the most explosive quarterback in that conference. And then they're hosting Miami, and then you're hosting South Carolina, who – by that point, could be playing some pretty good football. You know, and I mean, we talked about this a year ago, though, Keith, and I told you South Carolina, and South Carolina had their number. They didn't pull it out, but I'm just saying, it's not like they don't have cupcakes the rest of the way. You know, they're going to have to play some good football.
They are going to play some good football. There are some teams on their schedule that can beat them, and will have a chance to.
I think they lose one somewhere. I think that they
– I'll go as far as saying they lose two.
You think they lose two?
Mm-hmm.
I think if Uiagalelei
– wow, that was impressive. Whoa, first like attempt. Yeah. Listen to that.
If DJ plays like he did this past weekend, like I said, I don't think there's a single ball game on their schedule that they shouldn't win. I think
one of these road environments. I think Tennessee
I think,
or South
I think,
Bend
yeah,
is going to be
probably
tough.
Their best.
Really tough.
I think. Well, for me, it's in Doak Campbell. So I think Florida State has a pretty good shot at mm-hmm. being a one loss or probably. I mean, Florida State's next two games are Wake and NC State.
Yeah.
If they at least just pull off one of those games, and Clemson rolls into the town,
mm-hmm.
that place is going to be nuts.
Yeah, it's going to be wild.
It's like a Tennessee, mm-hmm. you know. They are just itching.
They're dying.
To have
they're
some
desperate.
Kind of something going on down there.
Right.
So if they can pull, I mean, even if they don't, that place will probably still be rocking.
Right. Yeah, I think it's rocking regardless.
It's probably rocking regardless. But I'm just saying if Florida State pulls out one of these next two games,
they're a four and two ball club.
They're top 25 with Clemson rolling in. That place will be drunk. That's what will be happening.
You're not wrong.
Literally will be drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get what he's saying. Last game that we're going to talk about, MTSU 45, the Miami Hurricanes 31.
You could have asked every Tennessean from here to Middlesboro, or Murfreesboro, excuse me. I just went up to Kentucky, to Murfreesboro, to down in Nashville, all the way over to Memphis. You could have asked every kid on campus at MTSU who wins this Saturday.
Miami.
And not one would have said anything different than the Miami Hurricanes. And they dominated Miami.
Yeah, it wasn't close.
It was not close. There was actually, okay, I watched a little pieces of that game. And Miami has MTSU on the goal line, on their own, the shadow of their own goal line.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say they were on maybe the 3-yard line, something like that. They tried to hard count them,
uh-huh.
Try to get yardage.
Mm-hmm.
Miami was disciplined. They didn't jump. They end up throwing just a quick, you know, X rail and take it the distance, like 80-something, 90-something yards. Yep. To the house that put that game away.
Well, I saw a statistic
How do you let that happen?
I saw a statistic that said that MTSU had 4 passing plays greater than 70 or 80 yards.
Yes.
Wow.
And I watched bits and pieces of that game when I saw the score, and it looked like pretty much Miami said, we got better dudes than you.
Yeah.
We're running zero coverage, maybe a high safety. They said, we got better dudes, beat them.
And
when you see an upset like this, I always look at the box score,
mm-hmm.
Just to kind of get a feel of maybe where things went wrong. Everything went wrong. I mean, they were beaten in total yards, rushing yards, passing yards, turnovers, penalty. I mean, everything. Like, MTSU dominated every single statistical category of the ball game. Let me go on a rant here. The Orange Bowl is trash.
It is trash.
Okay?
It is such trash.
If you're a Miami fan.
You know why it's trash? Because you got a college team playing in the No Fun League stadium. They're playing in an NFL stadium. That's why it's trash. You can't replicate a college environment.
How far off is it from campus?
Do what?
How far is the Orange Bowl off from campus?
You know, I honestly don't know. I don't know that stat.
I think it's a decent – and they're starting quarterback, which is – I mean, I could go on for this forever. It's just embarrassing.
They need their own stadium.
The college – the quarterback down there, is it – who's the
– one that got benched. Coming from Miami?
Yeah.
What is his name? Let's start with the
– Van Dyke?
Is it Van Dyke?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. I was just trying to think. But when your starting quarterback says he would rather go on the road,
it is Van Dyke
to play a football game because the environment's better. Yeah. That's embarrassing.
Yes.
Like, you're literally Miami.
Yes. Well, no, you're the U.
Yeah,
You are the U.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a terrible environment.
I would agree.
I don't know what else to say about it. I've never liked the Orange Bowl ever since it went away.
The new Orange Bowl, yeah.
From the Orange Bowl. It's just sad to see.
It is sad.
A program like Miami playing in front of like 15,000 people.
Yeah.
With the amount of hype that place had with Mario Cristobal and the staff he was bringing in, and he was going to recruit against the Florida States.
Well, isn't the full capacity of Hard Rock Stadium only like 60-something thousand?
I would imagine most NFL stadiums are around that mark. There's not a big environment there.
Yeah, and you just, you know,
it doesn't matter how well you're. I mean, it does matter. Let's not say that, Austin. It does matter how well your football team's playing, but why? As a 4 or 5-star athlete, would you want to go play in front of that? Now, granted, obviously, if they're really good, they're not going to be playing in front of the crowds they're playing in front of.
But they were ranked.
But, like, I don't know why I'm going on this tangent, but it's just
it's sad.
It's terrible.
Well, okay, this will put it in perspective. Guarantee if you flip the fields. Mm-hmm. The MTSU environment with Miami coming to town is way better.
I agree. Smaller stadium, but I agree.
Yes, the environment's a lot better. You just got, I don't know, just NFL stadiums just don't. Like, I've been to Titans games. You know, mm-hmm. You've been to a Cowboys game.
Right.
It is night and day, mm-hmm. to a Tennessee or even like a, I mean, a, I don't know.
Well, for me, it's not. Yeah, I mean, it's that,
just,
that,
the college environment is just totally different.
The fan,
totally
like different. A college fan base, is just so much more rowdy than an NFL fan base. Mm-hmm. And it's not the. I'm not really speaking towards the number. I mean, I am speaking towards the number of fans that are attending the football games.
Right.
But it's just like they're not, the ones that even are there are not loud. And even if you fit 60,000 people in that stadium, like the environment just feels dead. Like the, it feels like they lost to A&M, and it's just like, okay, so the world's ended.
I'm gonna that just for a moment.
I'm going to put an example here before you get to whatever you're about to say. Appalachian State hosts 30,000 people in their stadium. That's the capacity.
I'll be there
half,
next month.
Half of what Miami holds, the Hard Rock Stadium holds. And the environment every Saturday is far crazier, far more rocking than Hard Rock Stadium.
I agree.
Yeah, and that's what I'm getting at. Like, it's not that, well, they're only, it's not that,
you know,
the number of, the capacity of the stadium is not the issue. It's the fact that you have like 15 to 20,000 people showing up.
Yeah, but even when,
so,
well, I mean, but here's my thing, and I think this is what you're going to say, is 20,000 at Hard Rock for a Miami game is different from the 30,000 at App State.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, right, I mean, you only have 20,000 people there, and they're also
60,000
like
at Hard
not
Rock
invested in. They're not invested in the game.
I would agree.
And but like, you know, even when Mark Richt first went back to Miami, and there was like a whole lot of, you know, commotion about it. Miami was really good or decent, you know, at that time. They were ranked and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It still wasn't a crazy environment.
Right.
It still was not a big
dread going in and playing in there.
No.
Right.
Not like the OB, the original OB.
Right.
But
rant over.
Yeah. Just
went on a tangent there that would last probably longer than what we needed it to. My last point on that is I've been to Neyland. I've been to the Cowboys Stadium. And in that same trip we went to the Cowboys Stadium, we actually drove by Baylor's stadium in Waco.
Yeah.
And my wife and I, we actually walked up to the gates and just kind of took some pictures outside. Just even with nobody there, it was a different feel than it was when we went to the Cowboys Stadium the next day. It just the feel of the stadium was different. And I don't know how else to explain that.
Well,
no,
we're,
I completely understand,
I mean,
that.
We're college football fans. So, to me, there's
– right. 100%.
There is not a single argument that makes the NFL better than college football.
Well,
and that's why we're a college football podcast.
Okay. 100%. I'll use this example. We went to the Tennessee-Purdue Music City Bowl last year. Probably the at least top two bowl game in the entire bowl season. That was a crazy bowl game, even though you know, the ending sucked. But it was a crazy bowl game, one of the best bowls for that bowl season. The environment would have been 100 times better if it had been at either Neyland Stadium or in Purdue. Either one. If it had been either one of those, that would have been a crazy football game.
Right.
Would have been so much different. But you're in the Titans Stadium, and you can't, you just can't replicate that.
Keith's trying to get us to shut up here, but for me, just walking up to an NFL stadium just doesn't have
the
same
feel. That's
feel.
What he was just saying.
Like,
it's not the same. I'm 100%.
I was in Lexington, and I went to Kroger Field, why am I blanking? What's the name of Kentucky's actual stadium? I know it's Kroger Field.
I don't know.
I don't care enough to know. Which is why I don't know. But I was already in town up there, so I was like, I have to go by and see Kentucky's football stadium. So I drove by and I looked at it and I was like, that is so cool. And it was Kentucky.
Yeah.
I don't give a crap about Kentucky. I think they're like, just.
But it's a college football.
It's an SEC college football stadium.
I'll be honest. I'm gonna get a lot of crap from
stadium.
I'm gonna get crap from Cowboys
See?
Fans.
I mean, Commonwealth State like trash, but it's still a college football.
The Cowboys Stadium is really cool.
Oh, it's different.
I think it'd be really cool to go see. But I would rather go to a game.
Okay, so if I gave you tickets to a Cowboys versus whoever you wanted.
Okay.
Or Texas versus whoever you wanted. Which
100%
I'm
taking Texas.
100% too.
You could almost insert any, and you picked a really big program, but you could almost insert pretty much any
area.
College team, and I'm taking the college game over the NFL game any day of the week. I am a diehard Titans fan, and if you told me I have tickets to the Titans game versus any team, or I have tickets to App State and, you know, insert
Old Dominion.
Old Dominion. Either one. I'm taking the App State game, 100%. I'm a diehard Titan fan. Right. It's just what it is. Just, you can't replicate that in an NFL stadium. It's just totally different. Right. And I don't think people realize that.
I just think when you walk into Neyland, it's like you're in a coliseum. Like you're in a museum almost.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just like history every direction you look. Like
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You just touch the concrete and you're like, the things that have happened in the OB.
You don't have that in Hard Rock.
Yeah, so. And some of that, you know, comes along with just being there for years and years and games being played, but
so basically what we're saying is Miami, you need a new stadium. You need to build you your own stadium.
Agreed.
They just need to get their crap together and show up to football games. But anyways.
My last comment for this, and I just want an answer. I don't want another tangent here, Austin. Which was a bigger upset, App State over A&M or MTSU over Miami?
App State over A&M, 110%.
Agreed.
I was on the same page, but I just wanted to ask the question.
I'll end it there. It's not even close to me, though.
I mean, I agree. What you're trying to look for is, you know, who's the better team? App State's the better team, but that's still a bigger upset.
Still a bigger upset. Yeah. I would
have A&M actually thought they had playoff aspirations.
Yes. Well, and then a lot of people picked them to win the West. They picked them to win.
And it's not saying that they
still can.
They can now. Yeah, I'm just saying at the time,
but
110%, that was a bigger upset. Yeah,
I agree.
100%. All right, guys, that's it for this one. Join us again tomorrow when we're going to be making our game picks for the upcoming week. Those will be put out on TikTok and Facebook. Make sure you follow us on all of those, as well as Facebook, as well as Twitter. And until next time, guys, appreciate it.